Welcome, everyone. We will convene today's House Revenue Committee meeting. It's Friday afternoon. We're also thrilled to be here. That was a joke. You can laugh. Committee members, we are going to begin. We're going to reverse the order on our agenda, and we will begin with a work session on House Bills 4041. If you recall, this is concerning Indian tribe and governments and property taxes. Do you want to give us a very short? Christine, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4041 has three amendments before you today. The dash one would clarify some things related to the certain low-income housing that would become exempt under this measure. The dash two amendment would remove low-income housing altogether. And the dash three amendment would add reporting requirements that are pretty standard for property tax exemptions received by other entities, and then it would add this exemption to that list of that must be reported on. The revenue impacts have been revised somewhat from the previous. We've gotten a little bit more information. There's approximately $100,000 out there in tax liability existing that would be exempt under this measure, and then there's an estimate of some new tax liability, and depending on whether or not the low-income housing option is included. Overall, there's a fiscal impact statement of no fiscal impact, and the revenue impact details are here. You can see that they're totaling to approximately $100,000 in 1113 and increasing up to approximately $350,000 in 2015-17 of this measure. Also, I think that I would want to add a policy purpose to the papers about the measure, so it could be helpful if the committee would discuss explicitly what the agree on the policy purpose for this tax exemption.
Thank you, Christine. Questions for Christine? Yes, Katie, representing there.
Can we recess for just a minute?
We can. Can we? We can go into a brief recess, members of the committee. Thank you for that brief recess. We are back in session. Paul, would you like to come forward and talk a little bit about the policy statement?
Madam Chair, Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office. As we've been reviewing the tax expenditure report, you recall that in that tax expenditure report, there is a policy purpose, and that's used for the evaluation of any tax expenditures that there are. So what we have asked the committees to do, and I know you've done some of this in the Joint Tax Credit Committee, is to give a policy statement that we then put into the revenue impact statement. And that's why if you notice our revenue impact statements, they say at the end, creates, extend, or expands tax expenditure. This is yes on the property tax side. And then the policy purpose of that. And we would suggest looking at this. Christine's put some general language in there. To achieve a parity between tribes and other governmental entities. And you also have the element, depending on which amendment you choose, around the low-income housing, and you may want to make a statement about that. Obviously, it's to make housing available for lower-income people. So that kind of statement would help the tax expenditure review process and later any review process that a future revenue committee would do. So we recommend you do that, and we can put it into the statement.
Where's the one you suggested? Okay. Okay, members of the committee, on the back of the revenue summary is a suggested purpose is to achieve parity between Indian tribes and other governmental entities in property taxes. I know that there was some discussion and a look at this. Is there any feeling, members of the committee, one way or another on this? Do you feel it's important enough that you would like to, think about it over the weekend? What's your sense of this? Representative Bailey, you've got your head nodded. Do you have a comment here?
Madam Co-Chair.
Well, if I could.
Yes, please.
It seems to me that she's captured the main point in the purposes to achieve parity between tribes and other government entities and concerning property taxes. I probably would add for property used for governmental purposes. And then I'd also add that because the bill is likely to contain, if in fact we amend it that way, to contain the piece on low-income housing, promote the availability of housing for low-income individuals. And then I think a final point is that with the amendment involving the notification. That one of the purposes is to maintain consistency in the process of administering the property tax, because this section then adds the notification requirements and the ways in which the assessor and the property owner can respond to the request for treating the property as exempt.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, if I heard you correctly, and I was furiously writing as you were speaking, you are saying that a suggested purpose is, statement, to achieve parity between tribes and other governmental entities in property taxes for property used for governmental services and I didn't get that, to promote low-income housing and maintain consistency in the...
administration of the property tax.
Administration. Anybody else? And my ands and does probably need to be edited a little better. But anybody else have any other? Are we comfortable with that as a... this does not have a vote. I just don't want to go there if committee members have something else they want to add, subtract, multiply, or divide in here. Yes, Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with the word parity, but I'm not sure I'm uncomfortable with it. I would just say that the concept as we were working on this bill, was to extend to another government, a recognized government, the opportunity to utilize their tribal status as the foundation for the tax exemption if they were engaged in the equivalent type of services. Now, this is not to say that, I'm not sure that parity quite captures that, but the concept was if this recognized entity would provide these services, it would actually reduce the cost to the other government, which it is offering a service that is the equivalent of what the other governments offers. The idea is we offer this because we would do the same thing for a school. We do the same thing for a health facility. And those folks that are utilizing these services would otherwise be using other ones that enjoy that tax exemption. So to me, it seemed to make sense. Parity seems not quite right. So I don't like that word. I'm not sure why. But I don't want to slow things down to go sort it out. The idea was to if the services were the same, then we would focus on the services. The analogy I had used was that most of these, if not all of them, would have fit within a 501c3. And thus, what we were doing is saying, okay, because you are a government, we're not going to force you to go file a 501c3. We're going to recognize that you're a government and allow you to, wearing that particular designation, proceed with a similar service. That was the purpose. That's how we thought it through, how I thought it through.
Okay. Committee members, we have no obligation, I don't believe, to do this right now, today. Our policy, I think the bill is supported, generally. May I suggest, to get us off this, because there's no general agreement on a single, that we conclude our business today with the bill, and then ask you, Representative Benz, and you, Representative, to meet with Paul and me. I'll be in the room, and we will come up with something that we will bring back to the committee, and then the committee, and in the meantime, committee members, if you have something that you want to bring to this, please contact us. Does that seem like a workable plan of attack on this, rather than hold up this bill at this time?
I think that works, Madam Chair. We, of course, we'll have to have the revenue impact statement to drop at the desk, but we can certainly work with what you've had now and then have you review that, and then we'll just add that as the last piece before we drop it.
And could I simply say that I like what Representative Bent said quite a bit better than the parity word.
Okay.
There's a couple of items in that I think are significant. That actually can be measured and which could be used by the department to determine whether this particular exemption is successful or not.
And that's
in the material that he suggested as the purposes, as some of the purposes, including the substitution of services and a variety of other things that you suggested,
exactly.
I think ought to be included in that statement, because those are among the things then that the department can then use later as it evaluates the tax expenditure to see whether it worked or not.
Okay.
Committee members, we agreed on this as a plan of action on this issue. Okay, thank you, Paul, and thank you for bringing it up. So before us, we have House Bill 4041, and we have two amendments. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the dash one amendment to House Bill 4041.
Representative Barnhart moves House Bill 4041 be amended with the dash one amendments. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the dash three amendment to House Bill 4041.
Representative Barnhart moves the dash three amendments to House Bill 4041. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered.
Thank you. Madam Chair.
Representative Barnhart.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4041 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart moves House Bill 4041 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion by the committee. Representative Ayer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for not being able to talk with my colleague, Representative Fence, in advance of this. I will be voting no on this bill, and the reason for that is some discomfort. I'm not some discomfort on this concept in general. I appreciate the hard work. I appreciate the need. My concern is that the inventory is a $100,000 impact to our local cities and counties. That is not looking into the future and an expansion of the inventory of land. And I am concerned about that. I have some other concerns, which are probably a bit more minor. But not this is not my highest issue or anything, and I certainly am not going to lobby against it. But because I do have some concern for the future impact, even well written as this law is, and even understanding the need for it, I will be voting no out of good conscience.
Thank you, Representative Ayer. Any other comments? Can we have a roll call vote?
Representative Stamm.
Aye.
Aye. Gelser.
Aye.
Reed.
Aye.
Wong.
Aye.
Bailey.
Aye.
Ayer.
Nay.
Barnhart.
Aye.
Aye. The measure passes and it goes to the floor. We ask Representative Bailey to carry this.
Be happy to, Madam President.
And I know we'll look forward to that. So with that, we are going to close our work session on House Bill 4041. Thank you, committee members. And we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4110. Got a change of staff here. And Mazin will give us a quick short and sweet on this.
Members of the committee, the House Bill 4110 comes to you. This is the bill about the divestment or the what directs the investment council for the by the state treasurer, which oversees PERS and other investment to divest from the gas and oil. Excuse me. Concessions for the Iran. This is the Iran divestment. And you have your SMS statement in front of you. And I think this bill, you've heard a very similar bill last session. And at that time, there was discussions of how do we look at the bill. And I think these things seem to be fixed at this time.
Thank you, Mazin. Committee members, this bill was discussed last session. I think it was one of those that came close and then didn't make it over the hill. Any questions of Mazin? Representative Hicks, I see, is here. Would you like to? Oh, and Representative Widener just came in. Would you both like to come forward? You want to wait for him? You want to come up and we'll take you and then we'll come and sit down. He'll find his way. I think Representative Greenlink will find his way here.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members, I'm Representative Wally Hicks, House District 3. Since this bill was heard in the last session, I'll try not to cover the same ground twice. I do want to start, though, with this very jarring quote. Agency France Press on April 27, 2006, quoted President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad as saying the following, quote, "By the grace of Allah, we will be a nuclear power," end quote. This is concerning to me as an American, as it ought to be to all Americans. Iran has long been hostile to America and to our allies. Iran, in fact, declared war on the United States in 1979. They have taken Americans hostage and have been implicated in certain killing of hostages throughout the decades. Iran has funded Hezbollah, Hamas, the PLO, and other terrorist organizations. Iran has deployed troops into the Iraq theater of operations, apparently with the intent of operating against our troops there. Iran has also been supportive of the of America's enemies in the Iraq war. There is ample evidence that Iraq is endeavoring to develop nuclear weapons and the missiles to deliver them. The bill does seem to bring us closer to what I would consider or compliance with the federal intent and indeed apparently federal laws or at least executive orders. Executive Order 12957 signed by President Clinton in March of 1995 prohibits U.S. trade in Iran's oil industry. Executive Order 12959 signed in May of 1995 prohibits U.S. trade with Iran. These and even even more recently on June 24, 2010, the United States Congress passed the Comprehensive Iran Sanctions Accountability and Divestment Act of 2010. Signed by President Obama on July 1st of 2010, the act greatly enhanced restrictions in Iran. Such restrictions included rescission of authorization for Iranian origin imports for various articles. And a series of executive orders flowed from President Obama as well. I could go on and on, but because I have a very distinguished pair of members sitting next to me, I will just leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. We'll hear from all of you and then invite questions.
Okay. Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, or co-chairs, of the members of the committee, I want to thank you for hearing this bill again. We did a lot of work on it last session, worked with the Treasurer's Office. I am State Representative Jim Widener, representing most of Yamhill County and soon to be, well, possibly Washington County, but for now a little bit of Polk County. I want to thank you for your time and consideration in support of House Bill 4110. Members on the House Committee on Revenue, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you to further explain the importance and the intent behind House Bill 4110. This bill is a combined effort from a variety of organizations and has bipartisan support. We did a lot of great work on this issue last session, and I'm happy to have this bill before you today. The State Treasurer, Ted Wheeler, is in full support and will be and we can now advance the cause of divesting Oregon from the Iranian energy sector. Last time we ran into some fiscal issues, I believe a lot of those have been dealt with and addressed, and I thank the Treasurer's Office for doing all the work they could to help this bill move forward today. House Bill 4110 would work to divest our Oregon public employee retirements from companies that invest in the Iranian energy sector. As of September 2009, the Oregon Employees Retirement Fund have invested $250 million in companies involved with nine different Iranian oil companies since 2008. These stocks have performed poorly due to Iran's continued move towards nuclear technology and a threat of weaponry. Not only should OIC divest because of the fiduciary responsibility, but also because of the moral culpability of supporting these companies that give revenue to the Republic of Iran, which is a U.S. State Department listed as a major sponsor of terrorism. Last session, we provided you with letters from five federal delegates from Oregon who are in support and were signatories of the CISADA. I urge you to proceed alongside with President Obama and the 11th Assembly of the U.S. Congress and 21 other states and quickly divest from Iran. And as you can see, this is something that cuts across party lines with the people that are here today in support of this bill. I've yet to find anybody who doesn't feel that we should do this. And I would urge your support and help us proceed forward with this bill.
Thank you. Representative Greenlink.
Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlink, House District 33. Northwest Portland out to North Plains, at least temporarily, although it will also change in January, as Representative Widener said. I get really frustrated with memorials we send. Many of you heard me talk about sending a dumb memorial off to Congress expressing our interest on the Sudan or something, which seems to me always so useless and so it just seems a waste of time. Here's an opportunity for our state to express its opinion on a very important public policy measure, the fact that a power is moving closer to nuclear weapons and threatens to use those nuclear weapons to destabilize the whole Middle East. Middle East is important to all of us, but it wouldn't matter if it was there or South America or Africa. I mean, one country, one more company moving towards destabilizing the situation by having nuclear weapons, I think, is really important. We can do something here that's both symbolically important, and I think this is symbolically very important, but also practically important, that we can continue to try and support the U.S. government in stopping international conglomerates and investing in the Iranian energy area. It really does make a difference, and we really can affect public policy by doing this. So I strongly support this bill. It's been worked out in my freshman year in 2003. I had House Bill 3613, which got the Oregon Investment Council to invest in Oregon's emerging industries, and it took about 7 years to find a treasurer, 8 years to find a treasurer that actually do that. We seem to be moving in that direction now. It takes time. But this is one we've worked out specifically with the treasurer. We're not rolling the treasurer on this. We've worked it out with the Department of Justice. This is one that is ready to go, is narrow in scope, and I think is an important bill, and I urge you to work it and pass it on to the floor.
Thank you, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just a couple of things. One, I would note that I'm just getting very tired of all these Widener Greenlink bills.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, they're coming
before the committee. It's just, you guys are just really cut down on the number of bills you're co-sponsoring together. I appreciate that.
Are you insinuating there might be nepotism?
My father's here.
But on a more serious note, Madam Co-Chair, I think I've been vocal in the past that both on the one hand, I obviously am very interested in making sure that we're doing everything we can to limit the ability of the Islamic Republic of Iran to do harm and mischief in the Middle East, whether through nuclear weapons or through state-sponsored terrorism or through whatever means it has. However, I balance that with a philosophical aversion to having states direct foreign policy, and I think that we solve that in the makeup of our and the founding of our country when we directed foreign policy to the federal government. It sounded like there is now some precedence for the federal government essentially asking states to do this and to work with them on that, and I'm hoping that you can elaborate a bit on that. Is it safe to say that Congress and the President have made this a priority, are moving towards doing this, and are now looking for states to follow suit?
I think that is the case. As you can see from the bill, we're using the federal scrutinized list. So this is a list that the federal government's put out. We're following the federal government in this state into foreign policy, so rather than leading them. I agree with you. I think foreign policy does need to be defined under our Constitution by the federal government. I think they have defined it by the definition of scrutinized companies and their recommendation that they not be invested in. I think we're simply following them in this one.
Thank you.
Representative Benz, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm voting for the bill. It'd be hard to find too many that will vote against it. But the challenge, of course, is moving away from the flash into the actual substance of what this actually does. And since I'm not really sure of the dramatic impact Oregon's withdrawal of its money from the world markets will have upon Iran, I think this is really more for show than much of anything else. Too bad. I'm sure all of us, you know, don't share, or I do share actually, but Representative Bailey's suggestion that the federal government take care of the problems that we in Oregon try. The point of all of this is how much is this going to cost us? In other words, Not the fact that we take the money out of whatever investments we may have at the end, but the cost to the treasurer's office of making sure that we comply with that list. Because, like all these things, I kind of need to know the cost. So it doesn't have to be exact, but something.
We have the treasurer's office here, and they are scheduled to speak, and I think that's a fair question. And I think they're nodding their ability to start addressing it for you.
And the bill specifically says that they shouldn't start doing this unless they have the funds to do it from one source or another.
I'm sorry.
The bill includes in it the statement that the treasurer should not be doing this unless they have the funds, and that the funds should not come out of the investment accounts, out of the corpus of the OIC activity.
Yes.
Right.
That's right.
That's fine. I just want to know how much it is that we will be paying as a state for the signal that we're sending to whoever we're sending it to.
And a lot of work was done last session, even with the treasurer's office on this, to do it over the course of business and to look into this very closely. The treasurer spent a great deal of time between then and now, and they can share all of that with you, but they've got it to where it's very reasonable, to where it's not going to be. I haven't seen the fiscal on it, but they can share that with you.
Further questions? I just have to comment that I can't imagine that Representative Greenleaf would ever roll another public official, as he indicated that he was willing to roll the treasurer at some point in his illustrious
career. I wasn't suggesting that I was willing to. I was suggesting that I did.
Oh, okay. We won't ask for a definition of that. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much for coming down. Mr. Okulich, Mr. Salvaggio, these are the only two who have signed up. If anyone else likes to speak on this issue, now's the time.
Chair Berger, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is George Okulich, here on behalf of the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland, representing thousands of Jewish Oregonians throughout the state. We're here in support of House Bill 4110. And I think this bill really illustrates kind of sort of the collective effort that sort of has gone into, you know, sort of one of the reasons, you know, why we have a 2012 session. You know, this bill, we had roughly, I think, four hearings on this issue in 2011, got almost to the point where we could all agree on language. It just wasn't quite there, and so we continued to work on it in the interim. State Treasurer Ted Wheeler called us in August, and we said, let's sit down, let's talk, let's see how we can continue working on the bill. We had probably countless meetings throughout the fall. I think Michael and I email on a weekly basis, different changes, different suggestions, different thoughts. We've sat down with the Department of Justice to kind of get their opinion on the language, have them vet it. And so you've seen, you know, some significant changes from the bill you had in 2011. We sort of correctly tied to the 2010 Iran Accountability, Sanctions Accountability and Divestment Act. We looked at active versus passive funds. We included language that was mentioned before that, you know, that no way can action on this bill sort of, you know, negatively affect the fund. You know, that this wasn't just a demand. We're going to try to ensure that the OIC and the state treasurer divest from Iran. So it really has been sort of, you know, a lot of work, kind of working on different language, and I think we're to the point now where we can say everybody has sort of signed off, looked at it, feels comfortable with it, and like I said, I think it's sort of a collective effort both here in Oregon and, you know, just also addressing Representative Bailey's concerns is sort of a collective effort nationally. We're seeing roughly 20-some states have done some form of divestment, whether it be a state treasurer, an executive order, or legislation. Really, Congress did set some precedent to say, you know, there's what the feds can do on a federal level, and then there's what the states can do on a state level. And I think, you know, together, you know, we all, you know, sort of make up a little part of doing what we can. And certainly divesting in Oregon doesn't have the effect of, you know, divesting from California or some of the larger states. But it is important to, you know, like I said, the collective both here in Oregon and for the Oregonians living in the state. So we would encourage you to pass the bill.
Thank you. Chair Berger, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Salvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer.
And as George mentioned, this bill represents nearly a year of work on this issue between the Treasury staff, the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland, the Department of Justice, and the numerous sponsors. And I want to thank everyone for their cooperation on that. In helping to craft this policy, Treasury's objectives have been to protect the pension fund from a fiduciary perspective, to ensure that any additional costs are appropriately met, to maintain conformance with Oregon's existing obligations to the fund while utilizing the federal allowances, and to respect and implement the underpinning intention of these efforts. So I'm pleased to note that the bill before you, House Bill 4110, as introduced, satisfies these aims, and also to convey Treasurer Wheeler's support for this measure. We believe that this divestment policy appropriately and prudently fits into our existing investment strategies. Lastly, to address the issue of cost, I'll note that the anticipated fiscal impact of this bill is approximately $68,000 per year. It's based on similar experiences of other states, notably Arizona. The fiscal statement was prepared by us under the necessary assumption that the provisions of the bill were fully implemented. However, as noted in Section 6, applicable provisions of the bill would remain dormant, though in statute, until the legislature decides to pass the to appropriate money from an appropriate source into the program, which means that if the legislature so desires, it may pass this bill without appropriating dollars to it, and it would live in statute until activated by an appropriation. Thank you for your time. I will answer any questions you may have.
Representative Juan.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Gentlemen, Mr. Savaccio, I just want to thank you for staying at the table for a year on this important issue. It's always easier to say no. It's always easier to not collaborate and not work together. I don't know if the Treasurer is watching, but if he is, thank you, sir, and thank you to both of you for dogging this until we got it done.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Probably more of a statement to the Treasurer's Office. I, too, really appreciate your staying with it and working. I think it's great public policy. Sometimes these things aren't about sending a message as much as you had mentioned that this is consistent with our current investment strategy. And sometimes good public policy isn't necessarily all about it. It's about investing with clean hands and making sure that our investments are we're not investing in bad actors. Mm-hmm. And with Iran's current status and their behavior towards the United States of America, in some respect, it seems that if we were to be investing there, that we would be helping to fund those efforts. And even though it's a small part, because we are only Oregon, this is Oregonians' money, it is their retirement fund, and it isn't always about sending a message as much as, again, investing with clean hands. So I appreciate you recognizing our effort to do it and continue to work with us. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. A few questions here. Mr. Savaggio, Section 3 reads that the State Treasurer and the Oregon Investment Council, continuing on the next page, shall, consistent with fiduciary standards, including the provisions of RS 293-721 and 293-726, to try to ensure that managers who are engaged by the Council or the State Treasurer for the active management of investment funds, so on and so forth. I wonder if that's sort of the equivalent of saying that consistent with the laws of gravity that somebody should try to fly. what is your expectation that this will actually achieve anything?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, that's I love that metaphor, but I feel that this bill especially given Section 3, will have an effect, and I will go and explain why right now. The effects of this bill are not going to be felt through the pain that a company would feel in having Oregon withdraw their funds. In that particular situation, if we were just to say, well, we're going to divest from Company X because we feel that they're a bad actor, other investors come in to buy those securities. We don't simply burn the securities or the stock.
because that would raise the value of the other stock, we would be selling it to someone else, and the company itself wouldn't really notice the difference. What this does, though, is this sends a very clear message to the managers that are in charge of these actively managed portfolios that when they are putting these portfolios together, they're going to bump up against friction from the Treasurer's Office, from the Oregon Investment Council, in proportion to how what their exposure in Iran is. And what this is going to do, and especially in conjunction with 20-some-odd other states, is to encourage these managers to begin to not look at Iran, not look at these bad actors when they're putting these portfolios together. So in our mind, that's really where the meat and potatoes of the effect are coming from. Also, I've noted that we feel that this does fit in very nicely to our existing investment plans, which include, of course, the prudent investor standards. If we had simply left that out, I would feel very, very nervous about the ability of a treasurer or the investment council to just simply make decisions only considering where those investments were being made ultimately. But in this case, there's a balance that is going to be taking place. There are going to be scenarios where we see a company that maybe has an inactive lease in Iran, and we're going to have to say, you know, gosh, they're trying to do the right thing. They're trying to pull out of this country, but they have an inactive lease there. Does that count as an investment? And there have been cases like that in other states where the judgment was made to say, no, that doesn't. We don't count that as a material involvement. So although it is subjective to an extent, we do see an actual effect taking place. So to jump onto that metaphor that you used earlier, I would say that the Wright brothers, for example, looked at that metaphor and said, challenge accepted, and we think that we can strike that same balance.
Yes.
I'm very happy to hear that metaphor and that you've found a way to overcome it. So I'm curious, and at the risk of going off topic, but since Representative Greenlich brought it up in his testimony, for years we have been trying to get the Oregon Investment Council to prioritize keeping dollars in this state and investing in Oregon companies, and have passed laws to that effect and have been met with foot dragging and excuses. And statements that it isn't in the best interest of this state to in any way direct or limit the role of the Oregon Investment Council. Now, here we apparently have the political will to overcome those problems and create an airplane, and I agree with the political reasons for doing this and for the policy reasons of doing this. But I wonder if now we might invent our own airplane to help get our economy off the ground.
I'm not sure that you're asking for a response to that question.
Not necessarily.
I would be, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would be pleased to have a more extensive conversation about those types of investments and policy activities in appropriate contexts. I can have that here if you like, but we could talk for hours.
In light of the hour, and I know this is under further discussion, and I'd like to kind of keep focused on the bill before us, but I thank you for bringing it up. I am not unhappy with that. Representative Barnhart.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned something that triggered a question a little bit ago about an inactive lease, for example. I know enough about the history of the relationship between Iran and the United States to know that our relationship has been rocky with them for in the neighborhood of 50 years, up sometimes and down other times. I'm wondering if there aren't businesses that own, at least in a disputed way, investments in Iran that aren't recognized by the Iranian government, that aren't making any returns to them, to the companies, and that in effect put those companies in the role of the victim of the Iranian government as much as anyone else might be, at least in a financial sense. I'm assuming that this scrutinized company list would not include companies that are in that situation for that reason, at least, and that it would not be the intention of treating those companies as if they were actively involved in investments currently in the current which are supported by the current regime.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, to that point specifically, the bill refers back to the State Department, the U.S. State Department's judgment in determining which companies constitute bad actors. Mm-hmm. So, in that regard, I can tell you that there have been companies that the State Department has identified as having an interest in Iran, and if they are able to sit down with the State Department and explain the nature of their investment, or that they have a established plan to divest, or some other mitigating factor, it's fully within the federal government's authority to take them off the sanctioned list. And in that case, that mitigation would be reflected in our policy here.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Madam.
Just to elaborate on this issue a little bit, there are actually companies that are invested in Iran or other places that have contractual agreements with the government. So, in other words, if they break that contractual agreement, they would be liable for millions of dollars in what they do. And I think the language here is trying to not only say that, but allow for that type of situation. They're not necessarily bad actors because they're acting in a bad faith to invest. They're already committed and obligated for a number of years in their contractual agreements.
Yes. I do have a follow-up. Thank you. So, in effect, what we're doing is following the judgment of the State Department as it evaluates these kinds of issues. This bill defers to the State Department for that purpose.
Yes, the bill, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the bill would defer ultimately to the State Department in any question.
Right. Thank you.
Representative Bentz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Michael, I still didn't hear the cost, and maybe I'm just missing it. Do we know the cost of the effort?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the cost would be $68,000 per year.
Yes.
And what is that cost? What are we spending? What are we doing that costs $68,000 a year?
Certainly. Madam Chair, members of the committee, originally we looked at fulfilling the responsibilities of this bill through in-house staffing that's already in place, and what we would do in that case is simply determine how much staff time and resources were being spent on this particular effort. And the challenge there is taking the federal list and then coming through our portfolios, which are again funds of funds, so it's not the simplest list in the world, and making a determination of where these companies actually were, where their subsidiaries are, do we own any of their subsidiaries, et cetera. And that combing is where the cost is coming from. And then as replacements are necessary, then there's an additional cost there. What we found was that we ran an analysis over the last couple of months and determined that to run this program in-house, as we've recently undergone some strains in staffing our investment division, would necessarily trigger an additional staff member, and frankly that blew the costs up a bit. So what we've done is looked towards how states like Arizona handle this, which is to subcontract this out to an expert in the field, and that's significantly cheaper. So we are basically looking at hiring a third party to compare the Oregon investments with the State Department list and make recommendations as to how to implement the provisions of the bill.
You have a follow-up?
I do.
Representative Bentz?
I'm not opposed to the bill. I'm going to vote for it. I'd even vote for the money if we had it. But I'm always worried about the meat and potatoes portion of our action that you talked about earlier. So I'm interested in what it is we actually are receiving for the investment. That's one thing. The second is If we do this, then can we add other countries to this list and fit them into this same 68,000 a year? Perhaps, well, you name it, anybody that wants to blow us up. I'm not being facetious. I think there's quite a long list. And so those two questions. First, what are we getting? The meat and potatoes that you talked about, how much damage are we doing to these folks by virtue of this exercise? How are we going to figure that out? Because that's the right question to be asking. And I hate to have to keep saying I'm going to vote for this bill, but I'm going to vote for the bill. But I need to know the answer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm afraid I don't understand the reference to how much damage we're doing to the third-party contractor.
Iran.
To Iran.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier the meat and potatoes was in the. Excuse me.
Yes. Go ahead.
The meat and potatoes portion of what we're about is that when the investment counselors look at what we've told them, they sort through and figure out how they can adjust that which they're putting in the portfolios, and thus this does damage. Or it has created some difficulty for Iran. I'm trying to figure out how to measure that, the degree of the difficulty so created. I'm hoping you're going to tell me it's leveraged multi-gazillion times over is what I'm hoping to hear you tell me.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the simple answer is I can't tell you an exact figure or metric to that. The idea here is that efforts in combination with other states, other countries, the federal government, creates an environment where individual companies are loath to invest in Iran's oil and natural gas sector because they know that managers that are retained by the Oregon Investment Council, and we retain many managers, will look past them if they are involved in Iran because they will be anticipating this kind of scrutiny from Oregon, from Arizona, from Missouri, et cetera. So that's what we're getting for the 68,000 is basically contributing to that pool of pressure against a company that's considering should we be drilling in Iran or should we be drilling in a friendlier country. Well, they're going to say, gosh, if we drill in Iran, then we're going to have trouble with any manager that's retained by any one of these 23 states' pension plans. So we might as well go to this friendlier country. With regards to your second question about can we add other countries to the list, the short answer is no, because the reason that this is able to happen in accordance with the Department of Justice's approval is that it is specifically fitting into a very precise carve-out that the federal government has made through the Iran Comprehensive Iran Accountability Sanctions and Investment Act. So without that protection, it's very questionable as to whether we'd be able to add another country. And frankly, I don't anticipate the Treasury would feel the same way.
One more follow-up.
One more. Thank you for your indulgence. This gets us to that measure of the impact of that which we're doing. It sounds like we're piling on to that which the federal government has done and that which the other states, 22, and then we're 23. And I'm not suggesting we don't pile on. I'm still looking for that elusive measure of what we're getting in return for that which we're spending. And I don't think it's answerable, so I'll just leave the question on the record and go from there.
Thank you. Representative Bailey, I was wondering if you were going to ever get to that. I'm not sure if it's answerable. Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Representative Benz pursues an interesting line of questions.
I know, and you two, and there's a reason you sit together.
And I think I think we would agree that the 68 grand is a pretty good deal if it was the marginal amount of money that prevented Iran from getting nuclear weapons, and I'm sure every Oregonian would be willing to chip in a couple of pennies for that, and probably at lesser outcomes than that. However, I have a question, I think perhaps for staff, on this, my understanding of the way that our rules work, having tried to get cute in a bill myself and ask for a study in an open account that was to be funded later, was that that practice is frowned upon so that it does not lead to stake driving. And I'm curious if what our fiscal analysis says of this bill.
President, I don't think we have a fiscal impact statement on this yet. The fiscal office looks at what the state treasurer does, but not only the state treasurer, but everybody else that is involved, and they kind of compile, synthesize what they see. But I don't think we have that yet. We asked for it, and probably before the time you have your work session, we probably would have the accumulation of any of the other stuff. I don't know if I answered that.
Take a wait and see approach on that one.
But that's how they do all their fiscal impacts, because the state treasurer might be the main agency being affected by expenditures. It might not be the only one. So what they do is they try to get the impacts from the different agencies that might be affected. And then if that's the case, they synthesize it all in one impact statement, and they send it to us.
Responsive.
Yes, thank you.
Any further questions or comments from the committee? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you. I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 4110. Committee members, we will be moving into receiving some Senate bills. Watch your agendas for work sessions, or get your questions out there. Any other comments from you, Mr. Co-Chair, on what's kind of...
Have a great weekend.
Yeah.
3 o'clock Monday.
Yeah. Thank you. We are adjourned.